Thank you all for your support and your mentoring and this opportunity for us to gather tonight. Well, this is the last time we'll be seeing one another for several weeks. What do you think about that? Oh, I'm heartbroken. But I am going on a cruise, so I think I'll get over it. It's just terrific. I wanted to actually recognize three of our students who are our freshman class, who play music tonight. Jake Nielsen, who is playing the guitar. We should have probably had an electric guitar because it was so loud, but Jake has now gone off to work on the Carlos Santana project. Are any of you going to that? All right. We're looking forward to it. Maddie was playing the piano just a minute ago. Can we please a rounding applause for Madison? And you should hear her sing. She's good, too. She sings well. After our program, Vince is going to actually play the piano. Vincent, would you please stand for a second and be recognized? Thank you, Vince. These are our freshmen, and they are our musicians in the class. So we're happy about that. We are gathering every semester to come together as a learning community to be with one another, commune, network, learn something new, talk about those ideas. And tonight we have the blessing of having one of our alumni from quite a few years ago. In fact, she was Dr. LePage's student. I won't tell you how long ago, but it was a while ago, and it's so great to have you back, Marvell. What we're going to do this evening is have our presentation by our keynote speaker, questions and answers. I do hope that your students will ask a question, and then we're going to have some networking time to follow, and we'll be finished by 7 o'clock. Sounds like a good idea? All right. I have to apologize. I won't be able to be with you at the end of the program. I have to slip away for the Santana greeting, but my colleague, Lisa Chiappetta, will close the program. Thank you so much, Lisa. And now we'd like to have the introduction. Julia Hsu, where are you, Julia? Come on forward. One of our freshmen is going to introduce our speaker today. Julia Hsu.
Thank you, Dr. Lucy. Okay. Marvell Allen has been a principal consultant, certified career management and leadership development coach for Millennium Career Advantage, a professional consulting and coaching practice. She's a sought-after speaker, mentor, and consultant supporting professional women and people of color as they expand and grow their careers in the corporate, academic, and not-for-profit arenas. Current and past clients have included such companies as Genentech, Costco Systems, Union Bank, Hewlett Packard, Aspera, Goodwill Industries, UC Berkeley, and SanDisk. Ms. Allen's corporate experience includes the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, where she has award-winning senior learning and organizational development specialist responsible for career development, organizational training, and coaching, and manager strategic consultation. Marvell also spent several years in the Marriott organization in human resource and training management roles. Now let's please welcome Marvell Allen.
Ni hao ma. Wo de junguo ming zhe an man wen. 谢谢，欢迎大家。我很感谢这个计划，今天可以在这里发言。谢谢尤安江，谢谢尤安云和瑞祥。Good evening, everyone. I first gave you my name in Chinese. 谢谢你啊，谢谢你啊。 My Chinese name, family name is An. And my given name, Marvell, is pronounced Man Wen in Chinese. So An Man Wen is my Chinese name. I want to thank you for your kind introduction. And I want to also thank Dean, faculty, staff, and students for the honoring me with this opportunity to address you this evening. There were several things in my bio that you heard. I gave a brief bio, but I want to give you a little bit more information about my background. I talked to several of the students a little earlier about my background and how very different it is from a lot of others. But I think in a way it really speaks highly of the differences that we have when we come to Dominican University. I was highly influenced by my mother, Dolores Williams, who raised three girls as a single parent. She became a nurse on her own, put herself through nursing school, became a nursing administrator, also did a lot of public health nursing, including a project that she did in Kenya that looked at public health nursing and the relationship to that and tribal medicine in order to cut down on infant mortality. She was also an accomplished artist. She quit her job at the height of her nursing career to follow her passion, which was art. She put herself through art school and became another kind of risk taker. My early academic choices were somewhat based on my mother making a lot of these risks on her own. When I went to UC Berkeley, oh, by the way, I should really mention that when I was in high school, my counselor in high school told me I was not college material. Had I listened to him, I would not be here now. He said I should just stay home, marry some nice guy, have a few babies, and forget it. But in those days, no judgment, because in those days, that's what they told a lot of us when they didn't think you had the academic skills. I knew I had the academic skills. I just hated chemistry. I knew I had the academic skills. I just hated math. So I went to junior college and then brought my grades up to a 3.5 and transferred to UC Berkeley. I finished Berkeley at a 3.8. Undergraduate in anthropology, cultural anthropology, with a minor in folklore and archaeology. Obviously, I love digging in the dirt. I also studied a lot of languages, and I found out that just if you're educated, if you can say, quote unquote, I'm educated, you then will have many opportunities open up for you. And for me, engineering caught my eye, as I mentioned to my young colleagues earlier. I had a friend and I, we were both working at a dress shop. Her husband was an engineer at Chevron Research. He said, hey, we're hiring educated people to come over and be our assistants. That would be the technical assistants to the engineers. She went, got hired, called me 3 weeks later and said, this is better than the dress shop. And they pay you more and they have benefits. I went, I got hired by Chevron Research. That started my 13-year career in the engineering field. And I know several of you are thinking, oh my goodness, she was in engineering without an engineering degree. Yep, I was. But I was smart. Education was important. I went back to school to take courses in engineering, thermodynamics, engineering management, construction management, because when we both left Chevron, I followed her to Bechtel, which is a large engineering firm in San Francisco. Loved my 5 years there, but they wouldn't let me go into the field and dig and put up buildings and things. So it was time to leave. So I made choices in my career, and that's one of the things I want to leave you with tonight. We're going to be talking a lot about the importance of looking at disruptive innovation and what it means in terms of your own careers. I'll say one last thing about engineering. I was very, very blessed to have lots of people in my network as far as engineering because I made it my business to be passionate about what we did as engineering, as engineers. I loved construction. I loved digging in the dirt. And I joined the Society of Women Engineers, worked my way up to the president of the local Golden Gate chapter here. I was mentor to the Cal Berkeley Women Engineering, the Young Women Engineers Club. And I thought it was important for me to always be able to nurture and support others. My networking made it possible for me to have the best job I've ever had in my entire life, except being married to my husband, Ken. And that was, I was the first woman to work in the engineering field at the Golden Gate Bridge. I worked there for 5 years. Loved every moment of digging in the dirt, but I was afraid of heights. So it was a little difficult when I had to do work that might have been high in the tower or on the actual deck, or when we built bus shelters from San Francisco to Santa Rosa. But I learned a lot about where my passions are. Then what happened, and why did I all of a sudden end up at Dominican? I was reading a newspaper, San Francisco Chronicle, as a matter of fact, in 1987, and there was a picture of Fran LePage with this big article about this new program that was going to start on Pacific Basin Studies, and I just went crazy. I ran to my husband with the paper and said, here's my graduate program, here's my graduate program. And I called, I found out about the information, and I am so blessed to say that that opportunity to work with Dr. LePage and all of the other staff, including Arnon Hadar, Dr. Desta, etc., was one of the best times of my life. And I am so very proud to have been in that second class that got the degree in political and economic assessment with a focus on the Pacific Rim. I chose that because I was in the business already of making choices in my career. I chose studying China because I was already finding out that in my family, on my father's side, we had Chinese in our family, many of which came to the Caribbean after slavery was stopped and worked the sugar plantations, particularly from Fujian province and some of the areas in southern China. So I found out a lot about the connection between the work I was doing at Dominican and my family background as well. But I also knew that my mother allowed it for me to be able to take choices, to make choices, and to take risks. So why do I give you all this information about my background? Yes, it is true. There are very many people that don't believe, A, that I'm as young as I am, B, that I've done as many things as I have over the years, but C, that I made those decisions and still was okay with being successful, no matter what was thrown at me. So we're going to talk a little bit about disruptive innovation. How many of you have heard that term? Okay, great. I'm so glad. Well, believe it or not, there's opportunities for disruptive innovation even in your own careers. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, that Clayton Christensen was the one who coined the phrase disruptive innovation. Meaning, and I'll read a little bit of a definition, it describes a process which a product or service takes root initially in simple applications at the bottom of the market and then relentlessly moves up market, eventually displacing established competitors. Can you think of any? How about Wikipedia and the old door-to-door, let's sell you an encyclopedia? How about digital music instead of CDs, DVDs, etc.? Others. We think about the phone. Our telephone used to only always be landline, and now, what do we have? Smartphones. So when you look at disruptive innovation, think about your own careers, because that's also an area that can be seen. So I was fortunate enough to hear the CEO of Psytrain, which is a global leader development firm, talk about recent research that they did on what the workplace of the future is going to look like. And they came up with 5 megatrends that I want to share briefly with you and have you think about it relative to your own careers. For those of you that are sophomores, freshmen, juniors, or seniors, even for those of you that are already in your careers and supporting the good work that we do here at Dominican. The 5 are demographics, the knowledge economy, globalization, digitalization, and a shift in values. So let's tackle these one by one just very, very quickly. Demographics is showing itself all over the world now with the fact that we have multiple generations working in many workplaces, mass migration, aging populations, severe talent shortages, or so we're told. Sometimes it's severe educational shortages that we're really dealing with. But also, employees now are making the shift of wanting more things from their employers than just a good job, great benefits, and a nice place to work. What about the knowledge economy? Being able to create knowledge and innovation will be key to companies in the future. Continually rising demand for highly skilled workers and highly skilled people who innovate and take risks. the roles of managers and supervisors will also need to change, even though oftentimes that group is more risk-averse than others in an organization. In the book, The Alliance, Managing Talent in the Networked Age, Reid Hoffman, who's the CEO of LinkedIn, and two of his colleagues discussed the importance of building alliances with employees, both new and seasoned employees in your organization, to foster trust, alignment with values, and commitment in your organization. Many companies are losing valuable human resources and employees because there's not that connection. By the way, that's a book that I recommend for everyone. It's called The Alliance, Managing Talent in the Networked Age by Reid Hoffman. What about globalization? Growth will continue to be driven by emerging markets. We will continue to work across boundaries and borders, and we will become more multipolar in terms of business. There will be hubs of economic power. Regions and cities will compete for leadership around the globe. And you're living right now in one of those global ecosystems, the San Francisco Bay Area. When you look at all 9 counties that the San Francisco Bay Area comprises. And that's where some of these sparks for innovation will come from. Digitalization, mobile devices are going to be seen as the workplaces of the future, which means that a lot of people that are used to brick and mortar places of work are going to have to start thinking creatively about how they will make those changes. We look at mobile, and that's how we interact with our family, our friends, our enemies. We also interact with them with mobile. Healthcare providers, work, leisure pursuits. And so I ask you, when you think about all of the things that are part of digital, how many of you have some of the digital things in your own orbit, like Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram? I'm seeing nods, okay, Twitter. Okay, anymore, even those of us that are seasoned professionals have to get on board with at least one or two of them. I don't have Instagram, as I told my young colleagues here, but I do have a Twitter handle. I have tweeted and retweeted. I am not on Facebook, but I am on LinkedIn. I'm busy with LinkedIn, and it's more of a professional profile for me, so that's why I chose it. But remember that we can always make those choices. So I want you to think about workplaces running efficiently because of digitalization, running smoothly because everyone is aligned in terms of the work that they're doing. And it creates the opportunity for us to leverage differences and similarities between information and knowledge. And there are differences. So what about the last one, a shift in values? This, for me, is the most important one, I think, when you look at these mega trends that could really have a place in your new workplace. Starting now, and even as we move into the future, employees of the future will be looking for more autonomy. Positions that offer opportunities for them to master skills, to work for organizations that have purpose and values that are aligned with their own. So it won't be anymore, and I hope not for some of you here, that you have to take the job because you have to work. You can do like I did. You can be a sales girl. You can work at Walmart if you have to have a job. But make sure that you pick the career and the position you're looking for that's going to really feed your heart and soul as well. That's going to be very critical. Then the money won't matter because it will come. And one other thing in terms of this shift in values for where employees will begin to ask questions of their employers, they won't care about work-life balance like we did or like we came to. They'll really start caring about work-life flexibility. Let me do X in order to do Y. Let me be flexible. What are the 3 or 4 creative ways we can still get the work done without my having to put my butt in the seat every day in that office? So that will be an area that will be looked at as well. I mentioned traditional incentives will not be looked at as much. They'll begin to lose their importance because of the need to create opportunities for employees, both young and seasoned, to be a part of corporate social responsibility. Meaning you will want to work for companies that are doing good. How many of you have heard of Clif Bar? Okay, how many of you eat Clif Bar or drink Clif Bar products? Okay, Those of you who raised your hand, do you know anything about the company? You know where they're located? Berkeley. Do you know that they are a phenomenal company as far as how they treat their employees? In Fortune magazine, October 6th, they're one of the 12 top companies to work for. Now, we eat their products, we drink their products, but it's still an organization that you might consider for doing the work that you do, because most companies are going to need a lot of the skills that you guys will be having when you leave Dominican. So why should we care a lot about these megatrends? And why did I even bring it up? It sounds so boring, Marvell. You're talking about megatrends. We don't care. Yes, you do. You just may not call them that. It may be around you so much that you may not see it. And oftentimes you're given words of advice from keynoters, and they want to tell you, well, when in my day it was XYZ. Well, I'm not going to even tell you that. I don't need to. Because I'm happy to say that a lot of the advice that I've gotten, a lot of the feedback that I've gotten, both professionally and personally, has served me well, and it's come from people that are much younger than I am, and I've embraced it. Just like I'm excited that you embrace what you hear from those that are seasoned and have more experience than you do. So I'd like to just tell you a few things I want you to consider as you continue with your careers here at Dominican, or as you get ready for your careers outside of these boundaries. First of all, explore your passions. Find out what really moves you. Find out what really moves you. And use that passion to do good for others. I have always been passionate about trains. My husband and I are train buffs. We travel all over the world on trains. We've got a bucket list of 30 of the greatest train rides in the world. We've already taken 5. Something tells us we may not last till the last of the train rides, and if that's the case, our very last one is going to be on the Royal Maharaja through India. And oh well, if they have to put our coffins onto the train, we need to be on that last ride. We've decided. So we're going to make sure that people know what to do with us when the time comes, because we have to have that ride. Then we can say we've completed our bucket list. My husband also collects model trains from around the world and has been collecting since he was a boy. So in my relationship with him, I've come to love this whole thing about trains and the history of trains. And both of us have family members that worked on the railroad back in the day when it was a respectable middle-class job for African Americans to have in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. I also believe that it's important to have passions around your profession. My greatest passion right now around my own profession is the opportunity to use my gifts and talents pro bono for an organization in San Francisco called First Graduate. Has anyone heard of First Graduate? So First Graduate is an organization, not for profit, that works with young people from sixth grade until out of college. These kids and young adults are the first ones in their families to go to college, to graduate college, and then move on to careers. Pro bono means I give my services away to them at no fees, and I design and train career development programs for them, working with the career success manager to support these young people as they make that very difficult transition of being the first, and then being the first successfully. I decided that it was important for me to find a passion professionally and then give away those services to others. It always comes back to you, but again, I mentioned earlier, it's so important to feel that you're doing something for others and have a commitment that you really believe in and will keep. Not just so that you can say one day a year you did turkey dinners down at the local food bank. It's got to be part of your being. Another thing I'd like you to consider, for your careers, setting clear goals is going to be important, but be flexible. Be adaptable with those goals. I only took my degree in anthropology because my first major at Berkeley was a bust. I was a dance major. I had been dancing all my life. I just knew they were going to accept me into the company at Berkeley. I just knew I was going to be on Broadway somewhere dancing my little fanny off. This was before Kenny, of course. I just knew it. But they did not choose me for that dance company. and I was devastated. I learned that I didn't really have the heart for the stage. That's what you have to have. You have to be cutthroat. And I didn't have that. What I did learn, however, was that I was okay to dance in a closet because it was only for me. That made it easier to be flexible and adaptable in terms of my career. Remember the people and experiences that have and are shaping your lives. Focus on those watershed moments and what you've learned. Even if it wasn't all you thought it would be because you took a wrong turn. Things can go wrong even when we think we're doing the right things. And then I'd like you to consider the following little bullets. There's importance in the following. Humility. Conversations. Humor. Being grateful. Continuous learning, growth, and development, even as you're taking risks in your career and your life. Quiet time for reflection, meditation, prayer, whichever is important to you. And finally, sleep. That's what supports our overall good health. And two last points I'd like to make for you. I mentioned earlier the October 6th issue of Fortune magazine. I highly recommend it for all of you here to pick up that issue. It's a thick issue. On the cover, the 50 most powerful women in business in the U.S. What's great about that issue is that they've been publishing it for the last 16 years. There's a lot we can learn about the trends that have changed, even these mega trends that have changed with now 16 years back and to now, we're doing a magazine cover story on the 50 most powerful women. And men in the audience, there's wonderful things that are there for you too, because all of these women have men who report to them. What I loved, oh, did I say that? Okay, so I'll take it back. And those men are going someplace as well. They're very successful in their own right. But what I really loved about this issue was the diversity that they displayed in the backgrounds, the countries, the industries, the career paths that all of these women took, both the mature leaders and the younger leaders, because they also do a section on the millennial leaders and the companies that they may own or run. And there were many favorites that I had in that book. I want to just mention a couple or three of them. Janet Yellen. You heard that I was at the Federal Reserve Bank for 7.5 years. When I was there, Janet Yellen was the president of the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. One thing she hated, because you know she was an academic for most of her life at UC Berkeley, she hated being called Dr. Yellen. She didn't want to be called Ms. Yellen or Mrs. Yellen. She would chastise you. Call me Janet, she said. Call me Janet. 4'10", backpack, tennis shoes, trying to go down and get into BART. Nobody knew she was the president of one of the largest feds in the country because they ignored her. But she was down to earth and still a powerhouse. I like the fact that she embodies some of those kinds of disruptive innovation qualities that we all need to be thinking about in terms of our careers. Another two, actually, Lucy Peng and Maggie Wu. Maggie Wu is the CFO and Lucy Peng is head of HR and small and microfinancing for a superstar company that just went public. Alibaba. Anyone heard of Alibaba, by the way? Anyone heard of it? Yeah, I should see every hand unless you never look at television or read the paper. So these two young women are helping to forge where Alibaba is going. And I like the fact that international women were also chosen for this issue. They have a lot of the talent that certainly China and other countries are going to be needing. And even as I saw that when I was living in Beijing for almost four months doing my internship when I was in the program here, there were different things that were happening in China, just as there are now. And when you think about it, because of digitalization and technology, there's different things happening all over the world, and we are much closer. Another one of the women, Sharon Anderson, right, who is the CEO of Half Price Books. Do we know Half Price Books? Has anyone ever shopped at, okay, do we know Amazon? Okay, we know Amazon. The article on Sharon Anderson Wright was called Thriving in an Amazon World. Half Price Books is a brick and mortar bookstore. There's one in Berkeley. They buy a lot of old books. They have very interesting books. But they have 120 brick and mortar stores in 16 states, and they're going to open more. So they're thriving in spite of the disruptive innovation of Amazon. So think about that. And then lastly, Anne Marie Campbell, CEO of Home Depot's Southern Unit. The Southern Unit of Home Depot, which is headquartered in Atlanta, has one-third of the total sales of Home Depot. She's African-American. She has 100,000 employees that she's responsible for and 690 stores. The disruptive innovation, when you think about being in a traditionally male-dominated area of hardware stores and things like that, and I know when you, and building materials, and she is making a clear difference, but being a great role model for other women, for African Americans, and for men who either report to her or aspire to be like her. I want you to think about continuing to broaden your own perspectives on the world and those that you will be working with in the future. Learn what they stand for and what's important to them. What are their values and how do they connect to your own values? I'd like you to be thinking about that. And what do these companies do, like Clif Bar? What do they do to support the men, women, and children and animals and flora and fauna of our world? Ask yourself those questions as you're looking for these organizations that you want to go to work for. So to close my remarks this evening, may I ask you to consider the following as you embark on the completion of your studies here at Dominican, or as you get ready for that new position or your second position out in the world. Please think about the compassion that you have for others. Encourage others, do for others, nurture others when and where you can. Even if it's an underclassman, for those of you that are still here at Dominican, have an impact on someone. Live your values and honor your commitments. If you're not sure about it, it is okay to make changes, but be forthright about it. Continue to discover the importance of the relationships that you build. They will serve you a lifetime. They can also come back to bite you in the butt. So you want to be a little bit clear. I'm not saying be so picky that you only pick people that you think are going to be the right sort. Pick some that might not be the right sort. They might be more fun. Okay? But I want you to consider that relationships are what we stand for. And then lastly, would you please, please, please stay excited about all that life sends your way? Even challenges provide learning and growth for all of us. Shesheniya, I wish you a wonderful holiday season and a wonderful and successful 2015. Shesheniya.